And welcome into the Monday edition of the Doug Russell Podcast. We seem to be doing a lot of these in the last week, but the news broke over the weekend.
It's getting close to the end. It's getting close for me to pass the baton. You know, I've had a great run, and my plan originally was to retire after this past season, but I wanted to get us through the pandemic, but we're coming up on that time.
That from the Inside Wisconsin podcast with Trevor Thomas and John Anderson. I guess you could say they got the jump on all of us, even Journal Sentinel Badgers beat reporter Jeff Patricus, who is always ahead of the curve. Jeff tweeting on Saturday morning, quote, "Some Badgers news for you today. Barry Alvarez, UW's full-time AD since 2006, is close to retiring. Expect an announcement sometime in the next couple of weeks. Sounds as if Alvarez could stay on through July. We'll have a quick story on our site soon. He is 74. So the signs have been there. Again, Barry Alvarez, 74 years old. He's not going to hang on at UW forever. We just had to all connect the dots. And while it's not shocking, it is a little jarring to think of Wisconsin athletics without Barry Alvarez running some part of the show, whether it's as the football coach or whether it is as the athletic director. And he spent about half of his time at UW as the football coach and the second half as the AD. But his stamp is all over the university. And there's a whole generation, maybe a generation and a half, of people that are younger than, say, I don't know, what? He's been there for 31 years, so if you're older than 37, you might remember it a little bit. If you're any younger than that, you probably don't. But rewind if you can, and I guess it depends on how old you are. If you're as old as I am, you can relate to this, but rewind to the late 1980s. The Wisconsin Badgers were not only a terrible football team, they were a terrible athletic department. The football team sucked. The basketball team sucked. I mean, I think the kids tried. There wasn't a lack of effort, but there certainly was a lack of talent, and there certainly was a lack of direction. They were the dregs of the Big Ten. Respect for Wisconsin football didn't exist. Attendance at Camp Randall Stadium, I wouldn't say didn't exist, but there were 35,000 empty seats at Camp Randall every single Saturday when there was a game going on. Times were different a generation and a half ago, certainly. Athletic departments were expected to pull their weight. The multi-million dollar television network deals that we see today didn't exist yet. The internet didn't exist yet. All that streaming didn't exist yet. The Big Ten Network didn't exist yet. So when I say that the Wisconsin Athletic Department was carrying a $2.1 million debt, that seems like nothing today. But 30 plus years ago, it was a big deal. But new Chancellor Donna Shalala cared. She fired athletic director Ade Sponberg and hired Pat Richter, and he cared. We hear a lot in the state of Wisconsin sports lore about how Bob Harlan hired Ron Wolf, who hired Mike Holmgren, and the rest is history. Well, it's the same thing in Madison, just with different people wearing different colors. Instead of green and gold, it was red. Donna Shalala hired Pat Richter, so it's like Bob Harlan hiring Ron Wolf. Pat Richter hired an up-and-coming assistant coach from a big program, not Mike Holmgren in Green Bay, but rather Notre Dame's defensive coordinator, Barry Alvarez. And Alvarez would take on the challenge of coming to Madison and reviving as he would, these are his words, not mine, as Barry Alvarez would later put it, quote, "the shittiest program maybe in the country," end quote. So that begs the question, how had Wisconsin football gotten so bad? It kind of started when Dave McLean died of a heart attack in 1986, before the 1986 season. It was during spring ball. And he at least had the Badgers program treading water. They went to a couple of lousy bowl games. And when I say lousy bowl games, I'm talking about, you know, the Garden State Bowl, which doesn't exist anymore. The Garden State Bowl, which was held in the Garden State, was held in the Meadowlands in December. So you can imagine for yourself just how nice that was, how great of a bowl game that was to go to. They played in something called the Hall of Fame Bowl in the early 1980s as well. But he did have 46 wins in 8 seasons. They were at least okay. They were kind of middling. They weren't good enough to compete for a Rose Bowl. They weren't bad enough to be the dregs of the Big Ten Conference. That at the time was still Northwestern or Indiana. But those 46 wins in 8 years, that was just 6 short of tying the program record by a coach in the modern era. But what happened after Dave McLean died of a heart attack, and he was only 48 years old, but when he died of that heart attack, defensive coordinator Jim Hillis served as the interim coach, and they started this tumble. They were only 3-9 in the 1 year that Jim Hillis was the interim head coach. And then they hired this guy named Don Morton, and he was going to revolutionize Big Ten football. He was at Tulsa for 2 years, and he implemented what was called the Veer offense. And you can't, there's a certain, you know, age of Badgers fans that you can't say that word, Veer, in front of without getting dirty looks. It used to, you know, get you punched in the face back in the day. But he had this thing called the Veer offense. It was an option-heavy system, but what it led to, I mean, it was supposed to be, you know, the quarterback, you needed a mobile quarterback and you needed a good running back. And the quarterback would make the decision at the last possible second whether or not he was going to keep the ball. So basically, there weren't any forward passes that were thrown. You know, say it was a sweep left. It's a sweep left. And then, you know, we don't see the option that much in college football anymore. But if the quarterback was going to get tackled, then he would, you know, pitch the ball to the tailback. If the quarterback had a running lane, he would go through the running lane. That's how it was supposed to work. It didn't. At all. All the Badgers did was fumble the ball. They had 111 fumbles in the three. Wrap your mind around this. 111 fumbles in the 3 seasons that Don Morton was trying to run this horrible Veer offense in Madison. They only won 6 games in 3 years. They only won 3 games in conference play. They were being outscored by more than 2 touchdowns every game. The worst offensive season in the last 45 years. The home attendance at Camp Randall Stadium dropped to just over 40,000 fans. And when it came time to decide whether or not Don Morton was going to be retained as the head football coach at the University of Wisconsin, the athletic board voted 10-0 to get rid of him. That never happens. The rest, though, after that regime change, again, it's the same thing that happened in Green Bay that happened in Madison. It was Bob Harlan, Ron Wolf, Mike Holmgren, the rest is history, because leadership is where everything starts and ends. In Madison, it was Donna Shalala to Pat Ricker to Barry Alvarez, and then the rest, as they say, is history.
University of Wisconsin-Madison has offered the position of head football coach to Barry Alvarez, currently on the staff of the University of Notre Dame.
I'm extremely pleased and proud to publicly welcome Barry Alvarez to the University of Wisconsin and introduce him as the Wisconsin head football coach, 1990, Barry Alvarez.
Hey, let me just say this. They want to they better get season tickets right now, because before long, they probably won't be able to.
Picks up the blitz. Bevel's got to scramble out of trouble. He's got a big opening at the 20. Bevel at the 15. Bevel at the 10. Bevel at the 5. Bevel's into the end zone! Darrell Bevel! That blazing speed takes him into the end zone.
I think you're always thrilled when you win the league, and particularly when you have the opportunity to go to the Rose Bowl. Every scenario and every team is different. You have a sense of accomplishment. I have just as much of a sense of accomplishment this year as I did that year. I think it was a little surprising that year, because we had, you know, our goal that year was to go to a bowl game. It wasn't specifically the Rose Bowl, but to a bowl game. We had to get over the hump. This year, this was a specific goal, for our football team. So, but it's still, you still have to accomplish it. And, you know, and I just, so to answer your question, you know, it really isn't much different. I mean, it's a tremendous honor and thrill when a football team puts itself in this position.
Joining me now on our top story, someone who lived the early Barry Alvarez years at Wisconsin. He was there for the end of the Don Morton era as well. He was also there at the Rose Bowl 4 years later when the entire state of Wisconsin tried to move out to Pasadena for a week. Former Badger safety, who you can hear on the Badgers Radio Network on WIBA in Madison and 97.3 The Game in Milwaukee. Scott Nelson, former Badger safety, joining me here on the show. Scott, thank you so much for the time. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not surprising news, of course, but what went through your mind when you first heard that Barry Alvarez, your former coach, and for the last 16 years, athletic director at the University of Wisconsin, was going to finally retire?
Yeah, you know, that's a good question. Honestly, at, 74 years old now, I was surprised that he waited this long, quite honestly. But I think with his grandkids playing, both grandsons playing, I'm sure for him there was some satisfaction in being around and helping to lead the athletic department overall. And then as things progressed, obviously with the year we had with 2020, I think Barry was just like, you know what, I need to work through this transition. There needs to be some stability for staff, the student athletes, and navigating through all of this whole process. And I honestly think, Doug, that over the course of his tenure, he loved what he did. He loved coaching football. He really enjoyed steering the main ship, as he took it over from Pat Richter, meaning the full athletic department. And, again, I think he enjoyed, what he did. And that was always one thing that, we knew as student athletes is there was an expectation, right? And he made sure that, during football, the time that I played for him, that we understood the direction we were going. Even though we didn't always understand why, or we may not have agreed exactly with what was happening. And I'm sure that was true with the athletic department, but overall, you can't fault the success we had. And again, that starts with Pat Richter bringing Barry in and Donald Shalala bringing Pat in. And, you go back to that 89-90 year, three pretty influential people that have, what we've, I guess, reaped the results of 30 years of success.
What were your first impressions of Barry Alvarez the first time you met him? Because you were there on day one.
Yeah, I was. And I knew a little bit about him from his coaching days at Iowa, just being around the area and, you know, being down the road from in Sun Prairie from the UW campus. We had some family friends that played at Iowa and had been around Barry and knew of him from being alumni that way. I guess just from the standpoint of the Big Ten, like, okay, the guy's been successful, helped Iowa go to some Rose Bowls, and so he understands what the Big Ten is. Then on top of that, the 3-4 years, whatever he had down at Notre Dame, winning a national title, coming back, I mean, that carries a little bit of weight behind that itself, too. And you see the type of defense he had, the coaching staff that he brought in. But I still remember our first meeting, and a lot of guys probably do too, that, you know, what's this going to be like? There's a lot of change. Many of us were recruited by Don Morton. There was a few that were held over probably from Dave McClain and Jim Hillis. So you really had three different regimes that were kind of coming to a head, and he had to figure out a way to unify us. And the first meeting was very matter of fact, very businesslike, and he set the tone. That we're not going to tolerate guys that aren't bought in. So if you want to play for us, you got to buy in. You got to find a way. You need to do all you can to stay healthy. But this is the direction we're moving. So you either get on board or you're not going to be with us. And honestly, we probably had about 30 guys for the course of that next year that decided that wasn't for them, which is perfectly fine. But the other guys that stuck around, obviously, especially my senior class, we're lucky enough to reap the benefit of 4 hard years of blood, sweat, and tears to finally get out to Pasadena and the promised land.
I'll get to culture change in a minute, but from a nuts and bolts perspective, whether it's game day preparation, whether it is your meetings during the week, practices during the week, what, from a player's perspective, was the biggest difference between Don Morton in 1989 to Barry Alvarez in 1990?
Yeah, you know, I didn't have a whole lot direct contact with Coach Morton simply because that was my redshirt freshman year. But I do know, in listening to the guys and seeing things within practice itself, the expectation was that you did your job and you came to work every single day to work as hard as you can at improving. So receivers that we didn't pass a whole lot, right, with Don Morton and the Veer offense and so forth. So receivers weren't really used to catching a ton of passes. So there's a lot of drop balls in that first spring, and you could hear from the coaches that you better catch the football, right? Because they were moving guys in and out to try and find players. Competition at every single position because they're trying to find the guys that could play. And we had some pretty good players. Don Davey was a D lineman. Troy Vincent, I'm sure people remember that name, was a cornerback. And we had a complement of many other people within there that had played a lot of football. Greg Thomas was one that I really looked up to. He was my counterpart at strong safety. And Eddie Fletcher, guys that had played a lot of football for Wisconsin. And they were willing to move some guys around too, trying to find positions. Raphael Robinson was a cornerback, played running back, came back to defense. So they were trying to find ways to get the best guys on the field. And as you saw that, if somebody's moving into your positions, that was a red flag that you better get a little hitch in your giddy up to make sure that you're doing all you can. And then I guess on top of that, just from the players, right, the elevation of a coaching staff and the expectation from the coaching staff, they did not back down with what was expected of us. And they continued to push and push and push until you develop a little bit thick skin. And after you form a relationship with your position coach, then you could really start to feel some of the instead of true coaching, getting after guys kind of feel, it was more teaching and understanding of what they expected and wanted from us. So we could understand the X and O piece of it more so like a classroom situation where we could see things happen and understand where the change needs to be made in order to be successful, whether that was offense, defense, or special team. So everything took a notch up. Two or three rungs on a ladder with as far as the expectation goes. And that was made very clear from Barry on down to his assistants.
I'm trying to give the listeners to this show a bit of context. You and I are almost exactly the same age. So I remember watching some of those games at Camp Randall Stadium with 30 plus thousand empty seats. I remember the Veer. I was in high school for that. I think you graduated high school in 89. I graduated high school in 90. So we're almost exactly the same age. So I have context to it. There's a whole generation and a half that don't, though, because Wisconsin football has been so successful starting with when you started to play under Barry Alvarez. But from someone who was there, someone who was at least in the program, even though it was your redshirt freshman year, how bad was it, just to kind of give maybe our listeners a little bit of context as to what the game day atmosphere was during a football season that, as far as wins and losses, just wasn't successful?
Yeah, the game day atmosphere itself, I mean, you have your diehards, right, that through thick and thin, even in the bad years of Green Bay Packer years, right? That people still come to the game because that's just what they love to do. Our student section and our band really were the main attraction, though. Quite honestly, at that point, I was at the tail end of Morton for his 3 years that were there. Students were throwing stuff around in the student section. The band was, you know, that was a highlight to hurry up and get to the fifth quarter so we can see the band. A lot of things that way that I'll call it embarrassed, right? You're playing football there and people are more interested in the cheerleaders, the student section, and the band. I mean, that's a kick in the pants, which you took personally, and not against your peers, not against any of the fans paying to come to the game. It's like, you know what, we're trying our best out here. And we realize our best isn't good enough. That transition then through what we saw coming out of high school and into college now with Barry and the change, it was an expectation. There was a little attitude change. There was a little bit more of a swagger that was coming in. Because the coaching staff that he brought in compared to what Coach Morton had, good guys, I'm thankful because they gave me an opportunity to get to the UW. But what we were taught, how we were taught, how they handled things within the Big Ten, how they motivated, was very, very different. And it needed to be. There needed to be a change from what we were used to seeing growing up compared to what kids see now. And honestly, kids now that are looking at the UW are, I mean, I'll say spoiled to a certain extent because they don't know anything other than Wisconsin winning football and games and going to bowl games. And it never used to be like that. And so for you and I, with our age, we're kind of in that sweet spot. Like we remember the old days of, and my kids get a kick out of this one, the old days, and I'm talking, you know, the early 90s, right? Which is not old right. to us, but we're right. in a different spot in our lives. What they experience now, like, what do you mean you guys only won one or two games? And I mean, they're floored by it because they don't understand what it was like because they didn't live it. And even people that were older, like when we finally went, cracked the egg and went to the Rose Bowl in 93-94 season, there was a lot of people for 30 years that we'd gone to a few bowl games but waited a long time to get there. And we heard stories from past players of, hey, back in 1960, 1963, right? This is finally our chance to kind of get back there. And we're so, when I look at it, so lucky. And I'm thankful to have been a part of that for what we've experienced these last 25, 30 years with the success of not only football, but women's hockey, just winning another national title, multiple Big Ten and national titles for our track and field team, soccer, national title, right? And the growth and expansion to softball, what that year really did for our athletic department was help create awareness of the University of Wisconsin. Coaches started to take notice that this is a great place to come coach, to raise a family with the lakes around the area and driving down in Milwaukee, going to Green Bay, right? Here's this little diamond in the rough that football finally put on the map, and a lot of other programs have reaped the benefit because of that one year, and yet there's a lot of work that all those coaches and other programs did to make their program successful. And again, that's part of the culture that was established back in the early 90s. And I think that still holds true to today, a little bit more of the blue collar, come to work with a lunch pail type attitude that Wisconsin coaches and student athletes bring to the table.
Former Badgers safety and current pregame, postgame host Scott Nelson joining us here on the Doug Russell Podcast about that 1993 season. And I tell this to Packers fans, and I've tried to tell this to program directors that aren't necessarily from the state of Wisconsin. I spent many years at the Packers flagship station and try to impart this wisdom of, you know, just having kind of lived through it. When you guys went to the Rose Bowl, now this is right before the Packers started to make their runs to the Super Bowl. It was a bigger deal when you guys went to the Rose Bowl because there had been no football success at all from either team, from either the Packers or the Badgers. But building up to that point, when the entire state of Wisconsin decided that, you know what, we're going to move out to California for the week, or at least try to move out to California for the week, how does one change that culture that we were talking about just a couple of moments ago, 30,000 plus empty seats at Camp Randall Stadium, the band being the number one attraction, the first year under Barry Alvarez going 1-10, and then just a couple of years later, you guys are on top of the world, the biggest story in the state of Wisconsin, bar none, by far, that year. How do you do that? How does one change that culture of so much losing to just being on top of the world in a matter of just a couple of years?
Yeah, Doug, I think I would say there's a little bit of luck to all of that, right? And Barry talked about it even in his book titled Don't Flinch. That was one of the mantras that we had, to not be afraid to play anybody, not back down from anybody. And that's a little bit of the coaching staff swagger I was talking about earlier, that these were hard-nosed guys that had been through the ringer at Iowa. Quite a few of them at Iowa that turned that program under Hayden Fry. Barry was a part of that. Dan McCarney, Bernie Wyatt, guys that had been there that had coached and been successful. So they knew there was a blueprint to this. So they'd been through that. John Plerma was an outside linebacker coach for us, had been with Barry at Notre Dame. Well, Notre Dame was kind of the downtrodden, right, as far as Notre Dame goes. Lou Holtz comes in. He brings in the staff. Two of those guys end up coaching and taking to a national title. So there was an expectation again of they knew this is what works, and they adapted it to their own little way. Barry, you know, took a little twist from all these guys, and then he sold Blue Sky for the first 2 years to try and get fans excited, and the coaches worked hard at recruiting. And at that time, right, we're trying to survive and be a part of this team as players in the locker room, as a recruiting players to try and replace us, which still is the result of recruiting anyways, right? But overall, we're like, gee, you know, they're in different schools. They're bringing in better players. They're bringing in some bigger guys. They're bringing in people that can compete. And honestly, Doug, every single year that hey, we got a new safety. We got a new running back. Like, you're looking over your shoulder, but not because you're afraid, but you know that the work has to go in. And that was the fun, painful, I mean, all those adjectives that you put into this thing, and painful because you were fighting for a position, painful because there was a lot of mental strength that we gained out of this, and a lot of mental and physical fatigue, and yet you have to continue to play. And at the beginning part of Barry's tenure, we weren't very good. It was plain and simple. We just weren't very good, and we had to work at it. So even though they brought in more talented players, the off-season conditioning, lifting and running program, it was intense. And us that had been there and had lost for a few years were sick and tired of it. You finally get to the point after a couple years of being 5-6. Hey, this was the 1 year of 5-6 was a nice turnaround. The second year we were mad because we knew that we left a couple games out on the field that we should have and likely could have won, bar except for one or two plays that cost us the game. And you get sick and tired of that, and that's frustrating. And so there's a little bit of attitude that goes with that. But, you know, forget this. We've had enough. We're sick of it. And so these younger players that are coming in are trying to compete for a job, and we're battling every single day. And if they didn't toughen up, they weren't playing. And so part of the whole job as you get older too, right, is to get these guys tested and ready to get out on the game and or on the field and play the game. And if you do that and you know that and understand where you were just a short 2 or 3 years ago, that this work goes into this. This isn't just happening overnight. But it was 365. By the way, we're going to class too. You know, it's just there's so many things that go into this thing that I'm amazed at what we were able to do. But we are so focused and as you titled, like, laser focused into what the task at hand was, and you were driven to the point where if you didn't win, something had to be done, and you knew that next week in practice, every single day you picked out something to do better, whether it's footwork, tackling, catching the football, running, blocking, whatever. There was something that we had to get better at. And most of the time the coaches would, I'll say, encourage us gently. If you catch my drift.
Sure.
That they would move us along pretty consistently every single week. And even in that year of 93-94, after we lost to Minnesota, what you talk about a reset, an attitude check for a team that was playing really, really well that stubbed their toe. I mean, they got after us, and we rebounded, we recovered, and we then played Michigan and Ohio State. And you saw another different team from that weekend up in Minneapolis. And that, I guess that's just the strength and endurance that you have physically and mentally, and how to handle a season that after 12 games now it takes a toll on the body, especially coming out of high school that guys aren't ready for. And so part of our job we saw as upperclassmen was to get those guys ready and not to settle for just being, you're good in high school, but you need to be great. And until you're great, don't stop.
Was there a turning point that you can remember? Maybe it was the 93 season, I'm not sure. But was there a turning point during the early years of Barry Alvarez's tenure as head coach when you were playing for him that you knew that, man, we're actually a pretty good football team and this could result in a Rose Bowl trip by the time the 93 season ends?
Yeah, you know, I guess there's two different ones. One was the road win up in Minneapolis. Which would have been 92, 91, 92, somewhere in there. I think 91. And then in 92, when we beat Ohio State at home, and they were coming in, they had a lot of really, really good players. Kirk Herbstreit was a quarterback. I think Chris Sanders was wide receiver. They had Robert Smith, who is the freshman Big Ten running back of the year. And so, I mean, they were still – Ohio State was Ohio State even back then. But we beat those guys on our home turf, and I think that really sent the message to a lot of us. Like, we can play. Now it's doing it week after week and being consistent with things. That's where we probably didn't hit our stride until the following year of 93. To be honest with you, I never thought we'd hit the Rose Bowl. I just didn't, because of how strong Ohio State, how strong Michigan, how strong Michigan State still was at the time. I would felt pretty good after that 91 season that we would make a bowl game before we were done, but had no thought process that we're heading out to California. It was just going to play somewhere and kind of help this program turn the corner and then see where that can catapult them after that. But sometimes the stars align, right? And you get lucky with a few things and you get a little help from other teams. And we reaped the benefit of a huge Michigan win and taking care of business that same day when we played Illinois, and then a really fun trip over to Tokyo to stomp on Michigan State to send us over the top.
I remember that night. I was drunk in my dorm room watching you guys.
Well, we caught up to you pretty quick after the game, I'm sure.
I hope so. Did you feel the impact, or how did you guys feel the impact when you did get to and eventually win the Rose Bowl on New Year's Day 1994, what it meant to the state of Wisconsin?
Yeah, I think once we realized, when we ran out on the field, you know, you see people around at different events, people walking through the float building, which is around the stadium. The day we walked to the field or got to walk on the field, there was people around there and wearing red and white all over the place. And we didn't see much of UCLA at all. And even then the day we went to the field, probably about, I would guess about a half hour earlier than what we normally do, Doug, just to kind of take it all in and calm yourself down. So you're not too hyped up 2 hours before the game. You kind of build into that. And a bunch of us walked down the field, and there's a ton of people in red and white out there already. And that was that kind of sent the message like, holy cow, this is pretty amazing. And then we warm up, and you're looking around even more, and you just constantly see more red coming in, more Badger fans coming in. And finally come game time, we're standing in the tunnel to come out. And I think right before we came out, Barry does his pregame speech, and he's like, just, doesn't Camp Randall West look beautiful today? And that was just like, we're here, boys. Let's give everything we got. And I think after the game, once you go, I mean, obviously excitement right down to the end, we couldn't make it easy on ourselves, which we could have, but we just chose not to for whatever reason. But it was pretty amazing to be done and have family and friends that were out there. We had a little celebration back at the hotel which was pretty low key, just people that had come out to the game again to support us that were, most of them were relatives. But you had just a sigh of relief. Like you just went through this, emotional roller coaster for an entire week, basically from Christmas through New Year's. And the beauty of that was we won. And you felt like the accomplishment happened, right? Our goal was to hit the bowl game after 90. And we did that. We went to the granddaddy of them all. We won the granddaddy. You beat a team that a lot of people had tabbed as one of the top in the country, and we didn't have a whole lot of respect coming out there. And just a lot of, we just played with a little bit of swagger. We played with some confidence. We went out there, and we flat out told ourselves defensively, we are going to knock these guys around as hard as we possibly can for as long as we can last. And that was – that was the way it rolled, and it was amazing to be able to walk out of there first on your own power after the intensity of that game. But to be on top, Doug, I think was, I mean, that was, you realize you saw tears in people that you had no idea who they were, but they were so happy that with what had just happened for the first Rose Bowl win ever. I had a chance to see Pat Richter and just say thank you to him. For Barry and knowing he had played in that game too, right? There's a special connection now that we have with these guys that even followed us in 99, 2000, and then the most recent run in Russell Wilson and Tolzien, right? Those guys that kind of went through that 3-year stretch of hitting the Rose Bowl, but we just haven't got over the top again. It's hard to do, but we can always say we were the first. And that's where the special memories come in with myself and my teammates.
About a dozen years later, Barry Alvarez, after two more Rose Bowl wins, the 99 Rose Bowl and the 2000 Rose Bowl, rematch, if you will, against UCLA and then Stanford in the year 2000, respectively. 2006 decides that he's going to step away from the sidelines. He had a couple of stints in bowl games later on, but to be the athletic director, going from being the coach of the football team to then worrying about, you know, softball and volleyball and women's golf and all these other sports that's not football. Were you surprised that Barry wanted to make that move as a lifelong football guy?
You know, the more that as I was longer, you hear different things being talked about. He had always brought up Bob Devaney. He was his coach, I think, out at Nebraska, if I remember right. Maybe
correct.
That was at Notre Dame.
No, it was Nebraska.
Okay. So he had always talked about him and his transition right into becoming the athletic director as well. He didn't share that with a lot of guys, but the longer we were out, we'd come back and talk. And especially when he was first tabbed that in 2004, I honestly think by 2006, he realized that he can't do both. And he had to figure out which one he wanted to give up. And his wife, Cindy, and their children sacrificed an awful lot moving around the country, being at different places, the time that he spent recruiting. And I think this was an opportunity for him to say, you know what, I have one main goal, and that's to steer the ship of the entire department, not to be coaching football and then having to do that on top of it. I think that just started to wear him down, quite honestly. And I think he made a choice for himself long-term health-wise to be present, to be with his wife, to steer the entire department, which Pat Richter had laid a great foundation for that. And I think that was an easier transition for Barry than to slide in than what Pat took over back in 89. And so things were in place. And I think he recognized that. Now, the consistency of it over the last 25 years, right, 15, 20 years that he's been around just solely doing that has been pretty impressive. And that, again, goes to finding the right people, having a list of coaches that you watch and you observe and you think could fit within the Wisconsin way, and then giving them a chance to let them do their thing. If they produce, great, they stay. If they don't, the nature of the business is you're let go and you move on. But I think what Barry always had, at least with us, was some sort of plan, whether it was week to week or for a full season, there was goals in mind. How do we get there? You share that out with the people you need to share it out with, and then you let them do their job. And that's where I think the stability from Pat to Barry was very, very good. And the people that were in place were solid people that had been through some of those same things in the administrative level that we experienced in the downtrodden years of the department itself, and watching student athletes come in and have success. And okay, they continue to work for us, we're continuing to work for the university, and Barry's managing all of it. I think he really started to, he never cut ties from football. I mean, I think we all kind of know that's always his baby, because that's what he did for so many years. But to be able to have success of a full department, really become self-funding as far as an athletic department, not to mention the Big Ten Network coming into play and being part of that, being part of committees nationally, where he's recognized nationally, and can provide opinions and input through all that. I mean, I don't know that you could ask for anything better than hey, I can't do both. I'm going to choose this. I still have my hand in football, and yet I get to see this big picture and watch how awesome and amazing these young student athletes are, and give a little direction and give them the things they need facility-wise, money, and for scholarships, et cetera. And I think he really took that to heart.
And then, as I did allude to a moment ago, after Brett Bielema left, and then a couple of years later after Gary Anderson left, Barry put the whistle back around his neck, got back down to the sidelines for a couple of bowl games, but putting himself in that position. How much do you think, as someone who knows Barry as well as you do, how much did he relish those temporary stints just getting a taste of coaching once again?
Yeah, I don't know that you can ever take coaching out of Coach Alvarez. Right? I think he's always coaching and always looking. But the one thing that's interesting to me, right, at that time, what was he, probably upper 60s?
Yeah.
So, okay, great. You're going to jump into this coach, and I know you're going to give it your all, but he was really like, you know what? I don't know the players like you do. I don't know the game plan in and out like you do because I'm not involved every single week. Here's what I think we need to do to be successful. Let's go. And that first season where he, I think when he took the Rose Bowl game, I think there was, he wasn't as involved as he originally wanted to be. And I think the second time around when he took, was it Auburn, I think, after Gary left when we played Auburn, he said, I'm getting in there and this is what I know works. And this, and he, I think he took more of the reins and the control at that time, Doug, to really help steer these guys. And I think players looked at, like, you hear stories about Coach Alvarez. You hear stories about him as an AD and what he was like as a coach, partly because a lot of the staff that was there and currently is played for him. So, oh, boys, coach does his pregame speech, and they're going to – I mean, those are the fun thing. And so these young kids that have heard about this success and this program that was built and Bering being such a huge part of that are excited to have this legendary coach right there as your athletic director. And then obviously you get a chance to be coached by him or led by him out on the field. That, yeah, there's a little bit of extra juice that goes into that. I think Barry feeds off that. Without a doubt, it's hard not to when you're in the locker room and there's something special about that. No matter whose locker room it's football, basketball, soccer, whatever, there's just something special about being there with your teammates. And then you throw a personality like that on top of it. You're excited as a player. And I know for a fact that he feeds off that excitement and adrenaline and things from watching his players play. And I would guess that those few years that he took back over the reins for that one game were no different than what we experienced.
Last couple of moments with former Badger safety Scott Nelson. Of course, you can hear him on the radio broadcasts on WIBA Radio in Madison and 97.3 The Game in Milwaukee. From a personal standpoint, Scott, what do you take away from your personal relationship that goes back more than 30 years with Barry Alvarez?
Yeah, you know, he was always one that challenged us. And Doug, again, sometimes it was hard, right? Because you're an 18, 19, 20-year-old kid, really. But he knew what was successful. And he also talked a few different times with me just about, you know, you need to find something when you're done with football that you don't feel like you're going to work every single day. He said, I love what I do. And that was one thing that that I think stuck with me. And we don't always love going to work every day, but you love what you do every day. Right. So sometimes it's like,
that's fair.
That first daylight savings Monday, horrible. Right. But we got to get up and we got to go to work.
So, yeah.
That was one thing that I think from when I was getting ready to transition out and be done, find something that you like to do. And so maybe it's not even the job that you're actually doing, but the people that you're with are just really good people and you love being around them. And so the work just becomes part of what you do, but don't let it define who you are. I think that was one thing that I certainly took with me, the ability to motivate and encourage people and teach all at the same time and be fair. But fair doesn't always mean equal, and being thick skinned enough, I guess, to handle the outside, communication now, whatever, all the Twitter and Facebook, and, you know, it's so different from when we first started with just plain and simple print media in the newspaper. He's transitioned through a lot of that and gone through a lot of years and he held true to what I believed was right. And when you feel confident enough that way and you watch that enough, you start to feel it same way, whether it's me being a husband or a parent, or being a friend you treat people with respect. You treat people, you force them to trust you by the work that you put in, and you hope you get the same in return. And if you don't, sometimes you have to make the hard decisions, and yet you're consistent. And if you're consistent with those things, then when you look back over the course of a career, course of a marriage, course of being a parent, that you can be really content and comfortable with what you did. And I certainly hope Coach feels that way. I think in 2006 when he retired, the last game was against Iowa. They did a really nice video tribute to it. Matt LaPay was down on the field with him. A couple former big captains had come back in name recognition. And I hope Coach just takes a look back at that. And he thinks not just his time even at Wisconsin. Certainly we appreciate that time here. But his 40, plus maybe 45 year career of coaching football, teaching young men and guiding people through their formative years through college, right? He had a huge impact on a lot of people. And for that, I know I am, and I would guess a lot of my teammates would like to say thank you and say job well done, coach. And we truly appreciate every opportunity to be a Wisconsin Badger.
He has been inside the Wisconsin Badgers program as long, well, actually longer than Barry Alvarez. Scott Nelson, kind enough to spend
1 year. We'll say 1 year.
1 year. Okay. You were there in 89. He got there in 90. Scott Nelson, kind enough to spend some time with me here on the Doug Russell podcast with some remembrances of Barry Alvarez as he prepares to call it a career, first as the head football coach and then for the last 16 seasons as the athletic director at the University of Wisconsin. Scott, thank you so much for the time and the remembrances, and thanks so much for sharing your experiences with us here on the show.
My pleasure, Doug. I appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. There he goes. Scott Nelson, former Badger safety, joining us here on the Doug Russell podcast. You can catch Scott on the air on the Badgers radio network in Milwaukee on 97.3 The Game, in Madison on 1310 WIBA, around the rest of the state on whichever Badgers radio network station you happen to have in your area, if you are listening to us outside of the Milwaukee or Madison area. You can always hit us up on our socials. Please feel free to do so. You can find our socials very simply. It's at Doug Russell Pod, basically everywhere on Instagram and on Twitter. You can email the show, DougRussellPod@gmail.com. For all of our shows, as well as our Facebook page, our YouTube page, all of our shows that you can download for free, www.DougRussellPod.com. We will certainly have much more on Barry Alvarez's impending retirement when he makes it official, including speculating who might replace him. It seems as though Chris McIntosh probably has the upper hand, at least right now, but certainly there will be a lot more said about that by the athletic board when I guess all of the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed. All right, that'll do it for our show for today. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll see you next time right here on the Doug Russell Podcast.